This is Steve Maxter conducting an interview with Mr. Haplutz on the 5th of October, 2002, at approximately 3:31 Bangkok, Thailand time. We are at the Ambassador Hotel in Bangkok. And first of all, sir, thanks for consenting to this interview. Why don't we begin with a brief discussion of your early life, and if you would just tell me when and where you were born and where you grew up.
23rd of June, 1929, I was born in Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. Then moved to St. Petersburg, Florida. Early in my life, mm-hmm. probably at 2 years, 3 years, I don't remember, of course. Mm-hmm. And went to school there, went to high school there, and there's a buzz in here. Where do you want me to go from this?
Let's, first of all, what did your mom and dad do? What did your father in particular
My father was a Navy medic. Mm-hmm. We made the New Caledonia Guadalcanal.
So a lot of World War II service.
Yes.
Did he talk very much about that with you as you're growing up?
No.
Never? Did you ever try to broach the subject with him?
Never.
Okay.
If he wanted to talk about it, he talked about it.
Okay. And he never chose
reluctant.
To? Okay.
Right. He had some hard times.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. When did you have any other relatives that served in the Second World War, uncles in particular? Okay.
My brother
okay.
was considered a Marine
mm-hmm.
during the time frame of the Second World War, but have a brother that served in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sister that served in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't prepared for this. There are seven of us that served in the service.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to think. Harvey, myself, Catherine, my sister,
mm-hmm.
Robert, and Harold. And Marvin, did I mention Marvin?
Not Marvin. Mm-mm.
Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
Robert, I mentioned Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop. Can we stop this thing for a
minute? Of course. So your brothers Robert, Marvin, Harvey, and Harold, along with your sister.
Not Catherine. WW2.
No, but all served in the military.
Yes, all served in the military.
And your father, all served. Seven family members all serving in the military.
That's correct.
Wow. But as far as World War II service, no one but your father.
My father and Harvey, I think he got the WW2 medal
mm-hmm.
because he served during that. I don't know the issue dates and the mm-hmm. cutoff dates.
Okay.
He served in 45 and 46, so he probably is entitled to that
mm-hmm.
as a Marine on he was on Guam. He made the invasion of Guam.
Wow. Now, did he talk very much about his experiences with it?
Oh, yeah, we talked. Yeah. We talked.
Yeah. Did it have a powerful influence on you?
Not as much as my father.
Yeah.
He was in one part of the world and I was mm-hmm. in another part of the world. But influence as a senior brother, absolutely
mm-hmm.
wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
All my brothers. Absolutely.
Now, where did you fit into the age scheme of things? Were you one of the youngest?
Joanne, or Catherine, mm-hmm. Margaret, Harvey, then me. I was the fourth
oldest.
Fourth
okay,
oldest.
So right in the middle. Right in the middle. Because you said you had eight brothers and sisters
eight,
total.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you have eight children yourself, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
One adopted.
Okay.
Vietnamese.
Okay. Well, in terms of your education and perhaps subjects you enjoyed, what did you like most about school? Anything?
I was not a good student. I loved Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I took Spanish. That was one of my favorite subjects.
Okay.
English was one of my favorite subjects.
Mm-hmm.
History was one of my favorite subjects.
Okay.
That's about it. Math, I was terrible in.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. It was very limited.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a good student. I was a dropout. I didn't finish high school.
Okay.
I joined the service.
So, and you joined in 1947 to go into the Navy.
Right.
How old were you? You were, well,
I think I was 17.
Yeah, you were 17. Did you have to get your parents' permission for that, being a minor?
I did.
Mm-hmm. How did they respond when you said you wanted to go in the Navy?
My father was very proud. My mother was, mothers are mothers. Yeah. You know, you're going to get yourself killed, this type of thing.
Yeah.
I said, nice, Mom. I got to spread my own wings. And
Yes, sir. Now, why did you choose the Navy over the other services?
Because my father.
Because your dad. Okay. And did you get to choose to become a corpsman? Or was that something
I went in as an ASHA, Apprentice Seaman Hospital Apprentice.
Okay.
Yep.
And basically that translates into combat medic.
It did eventually. I did it to... I was trying to emulate my father because of his, which some of us do.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Well, when you went off to boot camp, what was that like, the initial experiences in the Navy? What do you remember?
Did I like it, you mean? Or
well, was anything particularly challenging?
No, not really. I'd always been disciplined in my family, so that didn't bother me.
With eight children, there would have to be a lot of discipline.
We had to. Mm-hmm. We all had chores we had to do. I expected to get up when they told me to get up. And I got up and did my job. No, I never had a problem with those kind of... I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it.
Now, living in Florida, did you get out on the water very much? So you would know what it would be like living on board, not necessarily a large ship, but spend some time on the water, get your sea legs.
That was never a consideration with me. I've worked on some boats, worked on shrimp boats.
So you spend time out on the ocean.
Yeah. Never afraid of that sort of thing.
Well, not necessarily afraid, but a lot of people have a hard time adapting to life on the sea.
It's just part of our life down there.
Okay, so you were
We never owned our own boat, but I was always invited, either to be a deckhand or help pull a shrimp net or something like that.
Well, what was do you recall what your first duty assignment was after your training?
In the Navy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, U.S. Naval Hospital. No, let me start over. Bethesda, Maryland, U.S. Naval Hospital. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what they call it.
The Naval Hospital in Bethesda.
Yeah, but it was called something, the U.S. Navy, well, it was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It had
had a bigger title because it was close to Washington. And all the dignitaries went there. National Naval Medical Center.
National Naval Medical Center.
Yeah, National Naval Medical Center.
Now, when you went into the Navy, there were some pretty interesting changes going on at the time. President Truman had instituted desegregation, integrating the Navy. What was it like during that transition? Do you remember very much about that?
I guess I didn't pay any attention if I did.
Okay.
It wasn't one of my agendas or considerations or something I thought about or dreamt about every night.
Do you remember any kind of resistance to that within the hospital system? Was it pretty much accepted? Okay, well, this is an order from the president?
Not in my purview. No.
Okay. So integration.
My brother at that time was transferred to Marine Corps Barracks. He was put on the honor guard burial over at Arlington, Henderson Hall.
Okay.
I believe that's the name. I'm not hell, I can't remember. So my bro and I were close until he got out, and he used to visit me quite frequently over to where I was working, and we got to rebond as he is a Marine, and we had all the old standard jokes about who's the less bell, how you you've heard all that crap.
But the jokes between the service
yeah,
groups.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the Navy sailors making fun of Marines, Marines making fun of sailors.
Get each other yeah. about the, who was hurt in that accident. Well, your mother was cut twice and, you know, shit like that. You've heard all that.
Oh, yes. Well, what, do you remember anything, let's see, 1947 to 1949? Eventually, you made your way to China in that mm-hmm. short span of time.
I left in 1948.
Okay.
And I went on the U.S. I went to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I went over on the AP-112 USS Man.
Okay.
We sailed out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in those days, you worked your way across. You weren't a passenger. I worked in the laundry, in spite of my medical stuff. I did that plus. Those the old days.
Mm-hmm.
There was one specific accident on the way on the Man.
Mm-hmm.
It had these old, I'm going to say 5-inch 28 guns
mm-hmm.
on these old transports.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a caliber. And they decided to go ahead and clear one of the guns, and the gun crew went down and took the canvas off and decided to clear a couple of rounds, and they put one in there and the bag behind it, and the damn thing blew up.
Jesus.
So we lost five Marines on that expert. Well, no, the reason was that we spotted a mine, an old mine, and they were going to shoot the mine. That's exactly what happened. So they're going to use this old 5.28-inch that had probably not been fired for years, and they aimed at the moon, and the gun turret blew up. So that was one of my first combat. So we had to go out and clear their
mm-hmm.
bods off.
And it killed all five guys up there.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my goodness.
Blew the whole turret up. One of those tragedy things.
Yes, sir. Did they... How did they handle the mine situation? Because that's still a threat.
Probably still there. Probably reported it to Steve, but who the hell knows where it is.
Once that turret blew up, they're preoccupied with everything.
Yeah, we focused on that. We didn't give a damn about the mine anymore, except the navigator was supposed to skirt around it.
Yeah. Did you encounter any other mines that you know of?
That was my only.
That was the only one.
That was
my
only.
Now, that was pretty far out. In the Pacific when you went up?
Oh, gosh. I wish I could, probably 1,500 miles. Past Hawaii, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Past Hawaii on our way to China.
Mm-hmm.
Past Hawaii, yeah.
Do you know if that was one of the mines that was laid by the Japanese?
No, I couldn't say affirmatively. Probably, but... It was the old spike mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The spikes
mm-hmm.
all around it. I don't know mm-hmm. who built those. Probably the Japanese. But
mm-hmm.
Were
those magnetic as well?
Well, I think they were touch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think
so
you had a brush.
Up against the spikes.
I think. Not being an EOD guy, I can't really answer those.
Pardon?
Questions,
yes, sir.
But we
Thank
weren't
you.
Trained in that type of activity.
Well, any other interesting events while on that trip over?
On the trip over, trying to think, the long term,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
We landed in, we went to White Sand Beach, I think, in Okinawa.
Okay.
We refueled and replenished our meat and potatoes
mm-hmm.
and whatever. And our next stop, I believe, was Yokosuka, Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And my next remembrance was going into Tsingtao.
Okay.
Tsingtao, China.
Now, what was the purpose?
But they put me on the USS Dixie.
Okay.
That was a receiving ship.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I know they put me on the USS Dixie, I guess, waiting for the repose to either redock or... It was like a welcome aboard type thing and outfit you with stuff you didn't have. And mm-hmm. How long do I have to be on this thing? And finally got me to the repos. You know, it was just one of those push line things. You did what you were told and you got in line and did it. And mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I remember. Got paid. I remember getting paid for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we always had to have the paycheck and stand in line, salute, and get our money,
mm-hmm.
which was mock or small bot in those days.
Uh-huh.
I remember that I smoked in those days,
hmm.
and then cigarettes were 6 cents a pack. I remember that. Camel cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Strike Green had not gone to war.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Vague memories. I remember the powdered eggs. Definitely remember sleeping four at a time.
Pretty cramped quarters.
Yeah,
especially for a man your size.
Always.
You're tall.
Always cramped.
Mm-hmm. When with a bunk
long
enough. But
you don't complain. You never complain.
No, with a bunk's long enough to accommodate someone your height.
If you're tired enough.
You can sleep anywhere when you're tired enough.
You know, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I always loved to be on the... I always liked to sleep out on the deck. That was my favorite place.
And they let you do that?
Yes.
Okay.
They did, because I asked to take the watch.
Hmm.
I insisted on, hey, why don't you go down below? Because the feet smelling was so bad
mm-hmm.
in some of these quarters that
mm-hmm.
I preferred it out there.
Fresh air?
Yep. I loved that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I could, you know, think and dream.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my favorite things to do.
A lot of stars out there.
Lovely. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. We did hit a typhoon in the South China Sea. I'll never forget that as long as I live. I didn't know if we were going to break in half or not. The captain kept assuring us that everything will work out.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know. I mean, we were like this on the repos.
Yeah.
I mean, this old thing was made of had concrete decks. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Concrete?
Concrete decks.
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yep. Four deep. Because we were a hospital ship. And we had all these wards that we had. We had, I'm going to say we had 11 American nurses, females.
Mm-hmm.
We had 10 doctors, I think, and the rest of us were the medics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to misspeak, but I think that was the makeup of the thing. But
mm-hmm.
all of our decks are concrete,
mm-hmm.
and we swabbed them daily.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was very, very clean.
Mm-hmm. You had women on board the ship with you?
11.
11 women?
11 nurses.
Well, you don't hear that many very often.
I know.
Now, because, of course, a lot of controversy has stemmed from currently in the Navy, having women on board ships.
Right.
What were the, I would imagine there were some very strongly worded rules and regulations concerning fraternization.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were broken all the time.
Imagine that. But that's interesting. You don't hear about women
yep.
being on board
yeah,
ships.
11.
Or, 11
and I have to commend every one of them.
Yeah.
They were super.
Yes, sir.
They really were.
Now, were these LPNs, RNs, a mixture? Or
RNs,
LPNs, I guess?
RNs. They were captains.
Oh, they were officers.
Yeah, not
okay.
captains. Captain in the Air Force would be, these were lieutenants and lieutenant JGs,
mm-hmm.
junior grades, right?
Okay, yeah, so they're officers.
They were,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, they were all officers.
That's interesting.
Yep.
And this was... you said this was on board the repos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tsingtao.
Now, what was taking you there? I mean, what was the purpose of this mission, the trip, and what would be your mission when you got there, going to China?
Our purpose ultimately was to evacuate. We knew China was was starting to fall. Masatong was, forces were building up heavily.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that we were going to be able to assist who we could to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to be able to take care of the some of the dignitaries, mm-hmm. the nuns, the priests, the white Russians. Who all the hell did we take out of there? The my priest refused to leave. Father Walsh
mm-hmm.
said no, he'll never leave. All those that wanted to go, that we would take them to Hong Kong, left, and I would guesstimate. We were able to house our own guys. Well, we all gave up our own beds for them. We all slept on deck and gave up our beds to the nuns, the priests, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, who were trying to do, you know, their work over there.
Mm-hmm.
We took the missionaries out. We took out their proteges, their kids, and blah, blah, and some of their famous teachers we took out.
Mm-hmm.
Took out all that wanted to leave that we could get on board.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always hard to say goodbye that you couldn't take any more on board. You simply didn't have resources. But we promised when we, you know, to come back,
mm-hmm.
which we did. But under more difficult circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah. So
now, where did you take the first group that you were
Hong
Kong. Evacuated? Took them to Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, right.
Unloaded them, then came back for more?
Yeah. Then we went to Shanghai.
Wow.
And we evacuated Shanghai.
Now, how many people did you evacuate first from Tsingtao?
I'm going to say 900.
Okay.
900 to 1,000.
Wow.
I'm going to say that. Because we didn't have enough on board foodstuffs
yes.
to supply. But everybody's willing to. We cut rations.
Yeah.
We cut.
Oh, yeah.
We all only ate once a day. All of us guys only ate once a day so we could feed them. That was important.
That's right. Now, how many naval personnel were on board the ship?
Staff.
Mm-hmm.
Medical staff, as I told you, I think 11 nurses. 35 of us guys, I think, makes. I think we had 9 to 10 doctors. I just don't remember.
Yeah.
Dentist doctors.
Yes. Guesstimate.
We're going to call dentist doctor
mm-hmm.
and rest of us assisted in what they were doing. I'd work in the operating room or I'd work in the dental office, and that's what I loved about the Navy. We were trained to work in any of the emergency room, doctor's office, I can pull your teeth if needed to be, an x-ray if you
mm-hmm.
had to have it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I got trained in the Navy.
So you cross-trained in all these different things?
We had to.
Yeah.
We went, yes,
mm-hmm.
everything
mm-hmm.
except psychiatry,
mm-hmm.
but they put us in every field, every month, x-ray, lab,
mm-hmm.
we had to know how to do all of it.
Was there a ship psychiatrist?
I don't remember that, no,
okay.
I don't remember that. I think the priest performed that function, yeah.
Counselor.
Yeah, counselor, mm-hmm. Grief counselor,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Now, were there... with the evacuation, that first evacuation out of Tsingtao, were there any medical emergencies?
Of Tsingtao?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Was there there was fighting there? Or
there was this a medical emergency. We were downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I may have told you this story.
Mm-hmm. No, you have.
We were only allowed to go out from 4 to 7 that day, mm-hmm. 1,600 hours to 1,900 hours to
mm-hmm.
pick up any of the things that were made or they had made or had bought
mm-hmm.
and wanted to take home as souvenirs like you and I are doing here.
Yes.
And they were told us to be back on that ship at 7 o'clock and do not fail. We had to go out in groups of 12. I had to, and I was the leader at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were coming back from Tsing Tao. We came back in rickshaws, they're called similars here. We got to the gate where the Chinese guards were. By this time, they're all communists.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marines were drinking some of this 10-cent vodka. They decided to get surly. You know, you just don't do it. And I told him, I said, don't mess with these guards, whatever you do. You know how people can get. And they pulled down on him with a machine gun. The two that got surly and cut their toes off.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So I had those.
That's a medical emergency.
Yep. So I said, I told you bastards not to do this. They permitted me to do the fireman's carry, get a couple other guys to fireman carry back on the ship. But they didn't understand the message. And I told them, you don't do this. And they were told when we went out, you don't do this. Settle your business because we're going to sail. And we sailed as soon as we got them back on board. Well, we got them back on board, and I took them to my place, and most of the toes, they weren't that battered up, but they were bad enough where they talk, you know, it's like cutting this part of your nail off
mm-hmm.
or here. That's what they got them in their toe. But they showed them they were serious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how.
And these were communists that did this?
These were communists. Mm-hmm. They were already in mm-hmm. the country, but they gave us the courtesy to get out.
That's nice. When you think about it, they didn't have to do that.
It was. But it was an experience I'll never forget.
Yes, sir.
And I felt bad because I was in charge of the group. I was the senior enlisted guy
mm-hmm.
in charge of it. Even though they were Marines, I outranked them. And I was in charge of getting them back. And
yeah.
I made sure I stayed sober to get them back and get them back in rickshaws. And mm-hmm. they the other thing that precipitated the problem, it got ugly and they didn't want to pay them, the rickshaw drivers. And, you know, you don't do this shit.
No.
You just
no.
don't do that sort of thing.
No.
And they showed us that, mm-hmm. my God, you do pay the rickshaw driver. And if you don't...
Did they get court-martialed? The two that got their toes shot?
They were reprimanded and lost a stride. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, how many beds were in your medical facilities? That, how many patients could
we
you
had have? 25.
25 beds.
25
okay.
beds.
But was that the toe incident, was that the worst of it for that first trip, the Tsing Tao trip?
That was the... We didn't receive any other injuries, no. We weren't in a combat situation until it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
We were when we went to Shanghai.
So let's talk about that. You went, after you dropped off the first set of evacuees, you went back to Shanghai to get
Shanghai,
more.
To Shanghai, right. We went to Shanghai. I was in the Park Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in with Marines, myself, with all our medical crap. There were two of us medics, Leo Zeck and myself, my godfather. We went in to get the people out of the... Here again, the priests, nuns, anybody was permitted to leave. By this time, they were drinking high whiskey, these Chinese communists.
Mm-hmm.
They were shooting the cords out of the elevators to watch them fall. So we had some people on the elevators that were pretty well injured.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to take them out. I didn't have any damn Stoke stretchers. I didn't have anything. So here we go. We fire and carry them out. And we had to back out, literally. We
mm-hmm.
backed out. But they did not shoot us while we were backing out. They did not. They could have. They weren't drunk enough yet. But they were shooting us. All the chandeliers, the elevators, tearing up this beautiful hotel like you can't believe. Forcing, challenging us, telling us, you know, that they're going to do this to us. And so all I had was LCM, little small boats to
mm-hmm.
get them back on.
Landing craft medium, sir.
Yeah, to get them on the dam, back out to the ship.
How many people injured about?
In my particular LCM, I had about, I would guesstimate eight. Mm-hmm. Eight. None seriously.
Oh, that's good.
Glass, cutting glass in the chandelier, mm-hmm. Falling from the elevator, some back injuries. Mm-hmm. None shot that I remember. Mostly breaking glass, mm-hmm. stepping on glass, terrorized. I had some terrorized people. Yeah. I had some stressed out guys and had to leave all their belongings.
Were there women there too?
Oh, yeah.
Now, were these Americans just working in China?
These were primarily missionaries.
Missionaries?
Missionaries, right.
And yeah. How high were the elevators when they were shooting the cables?
They were eight floors.
8 stories up?
Yeah, 8 stories. But they didn't shoot them until they got to about 2 or 3. But that's still a hell of a fall.
It's still 25 or 30 feet.
You're damn right it was. There was no cushion, I guarantee you.
No. Lucky people weren't killed. Oh, my goodness. Well, how long was this mission in Shanghai?
Shanghai,
a one-day operation?
Probably a day or a day and a half at the most. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We got out as fast as we could. Mm-hmm. Cleared the lobby. I was on the Marine Guard or Marine point to make sure that we had cleared everybody out. And if we didn't, I'm sorry. Goodbye. Because we gave them fair warning. Went up to every floor. I took the steps up to every floor and screamed them all. And, let's get the hell out of here. Take the steps if you can. Don't get on the elevators because they're shooting at them. And that's all you can do, you know, is forewarn everybody. And,
yes.
And they had, like they have here, they had their puyings. Mm-hmm. And this was a no-no.
You can't bring them.
No way.
But what you mean by that is they had their Chinese girlfriends.
Yes, and most of those were, no, they did not go.
No.
Most of them were executed.
Oh, man.
Absolutely, because they worked for the Americans. Yep, no way. And they were screaming in the hallways and begging and pleading. And the Chinese would grab them and throw them back, you know, like this, very violently, I must say, violently. Threw them on the floor. Some stepped on their face. And it wasn't a pretty scene, I assure you.
Sure. What a tragedy.
It was. It was. Here I am. I think 18 or 19 by this time, mm-hmm. and I never expected to see them in my whole life. And really didn't know at that time how to deal with it. No one knew what order to give because we weren't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that things were falling, but we didn't know they were falling that fast. So we weren't giving specific instructions, like a drill.
Yes,
here's what you do if this happens. We were just giving, do what the best you can under the circumstances.
And you were all unarmed?
Yeah, absolutely.
No weapons?
Oh, yeah.
Neither.
If we'd have been armed,
they
shot us.
Mm-hmm. So that was the case in Tsingtao and
we had Marines that were armed. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Marines were armed.
Okay, so they were armed. The Marines
you. Yeah, they had, what the hell they have? Thompsons.
Wow.
Yeah.
But no firefights broke out between the Marines and the Chinese that you remember.
It was a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a Mexican standoff.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to fire first? The Marines, I got to give great credit. They reacted. All I can say is with great patience, because they saw what was going on, but they knew if they interfered, it would get worse.
Mm-hmm.
They did it sort of as a home guard, a back guard type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I give them great credit, because it could have turned into a bloodbath. It
takes a lot of discipline.
Yes, absolutely.
In
now,
a stressful situation.
If one of them had been wounded or shot,
just that,
it would have been... They would have all. They were well trained. I must say, they were very well trained.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I gave them great credit. I'm very proud of them.
Yes, sir. Was Shanghai the only other evacuation you participated in?
No.
You did more after that.
that was my last incident in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
Then the British sloop Amethyst, did I tell you this story?
Mm-mm. Yes, sir.
The British sloop Amethyst got marooned in the Wangpoo River.
Mm-hmm.
This was all part of some of the same operation. The British sloop Amethyst is probably like a destroyer, one of our destroyers. And it has a contingency probably of 150 people, to my knowledge. Anyway, it got marooned in the Wangpoo. And we're up near the Yangtze.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pinging at them from both sides. They're not using rockets. They're using small arms, picking them off one at a time, and grenades, and they're launching grenades at them. So the British ask us to please go in and get these guys off. So this is my real test of combat.
Mm-hmm.
So they put us in LCMs, drove us up to the Amethyst. They're still firing like hell at us. We got on board the Amethyst. We had, I'm going to say 36 or 37 casualties. That's to my knowledge. They stopped firing long enough for us to take the wounded off.
Mm-hmm.
And we put them on the LCM, took them to the hospital ship, the repos, unloaded them, went back once more. Here I am. And I'm going to tell you, I was scared shitless.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, is this my time? You know, if it is, I'm sorry. Here, do what I can. So we went back again. We had pinged a couple of other guys. They did us the courtesy again to let us go in and do a complete search of the ship, find out that everybody was off the damn thing, and we got them all off. Took them back to the repos, got them on beds and started them in surgery. They had only lost one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite amazing.
Yes, sir.
Well, we had two double amputees.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We had two double amputees. We lost one, a Brit. And then, as I recall, the HSM London started steaming towards China, and the USS Helena, which was one of our heavy cruisers, converging. And I think that's the reason they decided to quit pinging at us with their small ship.
Okay.
Because we were going to blow the living hell out of everything that even moved on either side. And the Black Hawk, the HMS Black Hawk came into.
Okay.
So we had a flotilla by then that responded.
Mm-hmm.
And this probably prevented a great catastrophe, because the Helena fired some rounds to let them know. They didn't fire them at the people, they fired them over the bows to let them know. And the Black Hawk and the London, the HMS London, fired their weapons too to let them know that we were fully prepared to. This is an object lesson, is all it was. We did not fire them into people. We let them know that we were prepared to, if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget that. That was quite an experience in my life, and everybody that served there. In fact, I'm a member of the HMFS, the Amethyst Society, the guys that live.
Wow.
We get together about every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're dwindling in numbers now.
Yes, sir. Is that in England? Do you go to? Is that reunion that's held there?
Or? Yeah.
Right. Okay. Wow. Now, how many people did you pull off?
36 to 37, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to remember because we're moving the day. We're moving them so fast.
Yes.
We didn't have enough Stokes Deckers on board to take them out of wherever they were. Mm-hmm. So we here go. We you know, use the old fireman's carry.
Mm-hmm. Do it again.
And we use the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
Cradle our arms together like this, and
mm-hmm.
did all the things we taught. We did that well, I'll have
mm-hmm.
to say.
Mm-hmm.
We worked 37 hours. I remember that as long as I live. I mm-hmm. never drank as much black coffee in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my adrenaline is what kept me going more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Wheeling him in and out of surgery. Because our crew, we left some of our crew in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, so we were limited then in numbers of people that had that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
But we then took them down to Hong Kong
mm-hmm.
and to the British. They have at that time, well, until just recently, they had a great colony there. But,
mm-hmm.
They gave our hospital ship a great salute.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what happened after that incident?
Sailed back to the United States.
Okay.
Just we decommissioned the USS Repos.
Did you?
Put it out of the commission rig.
Yeah.
We had 8 hospital ships.
Mm-hmm.
In the fleet. Are you aware of that?
I didn't know there were 8. No.
Yeah. Sanctuary, Relief,
mm-hmm.
Repos. Pope, I can't remember all the names.
But names that are appropriate
yeah.
for hospital ships.
Yeah.
And this was in 1949, 1950 that you came back?
I was in April. It was April the 15th of 1949. We got chased out of Tsingtao, China.
Okay.
Right.
And then in 1950, you were stationed at Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor, right.
For 3 years.
Yeah.
What did you do there?
I was in U.S., what do we call it? U.S. Naval Shipyard Dispensary.
Okay.
We were taking care of the guys that worked in the Naval Shipyard, civilians.
Okay.
We had a civilian/Navy shipyard dispensary there.
What were the... What do you remember as the, I guess, most common types of problems people had living in Hawaii? Ailments, things like that.
Shipyard dispensary. The shipyard was mostly occupational injuries. You know, welding burns, welding iron burns,
mm-hmm.
falling stuff, ailments that they didn't
mm-hmm.
wear when
mm-hmm.
they should have.
Mm-hmm.
Falling from scaffolds.
Okay.
I have to think about this a little bit more. Vertigo and falling,
mm-hmm.
This type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How
about tropical illnesses?
One of the funniest things, and it's not funny, one of the most curious things that ever happened in my whole career. 2 people walked into our dispensary on the same day, and a marvelous doctor, his name was Hansen, and he's now dead. Hutchison.
Mm-hmm.
Hutchison. These 2 people came into our clinic, and both of them had the same visual signs. And he says, you know what that is? What was I called those days? Wasn't a sergeant. It was a, what did they call it? Corpsman, I guess. Corpsman Lutz.
Okay.
Can't remember what the hell they called him. These guys have leprosy. That was true. And that we had to sell them to Kalakaua.
Wow.
I said, how the hell did you recognize that? So he must have had a vast knowledge. And that's the only 2 cases I ever saw in my life.
Oh,
and they walked into our clinic the same day together.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
They were not even relatives,
mm-hmm.
never exposed to each other,
mm-hmm.
had no idea about it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that an amazing story?
The cure at that time, they have...
We sent them out to Kalakaua. Mm-hmm. I think it was... Isn't that the name of the leprosy colony in... I think it's Kalakaua mm-hmm. or somewhere on the islands out there. Mm-hmm. But they made great progress with the lepers. Mm-hmm. You know, the lepers were... we used to visit the leper colony. It's one of the things I did in Vietnam, mm-hmm. visit the leper colonies to more or less take them... ancillary things, soap, water, mm-hmm. Toothbrushes. I couldn't do anything for them anymore. And they were all, you know, gnarled up this way by this time, and it was on the end of their cycle. But we took them out stuff that would give them, and comb their hair, and make them look a little better, and nail files that, if their fingers weren't so curled or gone.
Yeah.
Do small things, and then toes, mm-hmm. and rub them with oil, you know, small things like that, just to give them some sort of comfort. Yes, that sir. Somebody cared.
Yes, sir. Now, in Hawaii, though, were there, was there very much incidence or problems with malaria? Had they eradicated yellow fever? All those different types of...
I cannot personally attest to that.
You don't recall anything like that? Okay.
No.
Okay. The dengue, that kind of stuff?
No. Most of that had been stamped out, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
Because we weren't...
Okay. There weren't a lot of people coming down ill with these types of things in Hawaii. When we were there.
Yeah. No, we weren't dealing with the outside population.
No.
We were dealing within the shipyard.
Right. And those guys would have been exposed to many of the same microbes and other problems, mosquitoes, everything else. So.
I will tell you a story that...
Okay.
That... And I don't know why it ever happened, but it happened.
Okay.
A guy brought his... He ripped his finger off.
Mm.
This part, the skin, was all from... I think from this joint all the way down. He brought it in the handkerchief.
That's the primary knuckle.
The whole thing?
The
knuckle and bone were all there. The skin.
Oh, just the skin.
He brought in the skin.
So his bone was exposed.
Everything was there, right. He brought in this in his handkerchief. He said, "Doc, can you put back on? Because, you know, in my religion, if my whole body is not whole, I don't go to where I'm supposed to go." So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make every effort to do what I can for you. I said, I promise you nothing. So I slipped it back on his care. Well, I went ahead and did a... I started up here and I deadened everything up here. So I didn't want to generalize him. I wanted him to watch. So I'm going to slip this back on very carefully, and we're going to try. And I'm going to baseball stitch you up here. I'm going to go all the way around where it's torn. Well, he'd brought it in apparently soon enough where he had not lost all that blood. And I baseball stitched him all the way around. And Doc Hutchison had great faith in him. He says, "You think it's going to work?" I said, "Hey, we got great wounds. We know it can work." I was lying like hell. And I waited to see if that thing would turn gangrenous. He brought it in every day. I did a very careful unbandage. I saw, I think on the fifth or sixth day, I saw some redness in this part up here. It's just a small amount of redness.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the nail had quit growing, but it hadn't turned black yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrapped it up very carefully. Said, "Can we see you in 2 or 3 days, okay? Keep it covered. Just treat it like it's a big sore. About another 2 or 3 days, come back." I did the uncareful. Oh, Hutchison, my doc, he's a commander in the Navy. He's looking over my shoulder, mm-hmm. adjusting his glasses. I said, "I want you to move it for me now." Started to move it. I said, "Oh, shit." I started to get so excited. I said, oh, okay, I think you've done enough for today, so let's wait another 2 or 3 days. And carefully, that thing lived. That lived. That guy brought me coconuts, Hershey bars, candy, and Doc Hutchison. He says, I don't know if that's the first that's ever happened, but it's the first in my presence that's ever happened. I finally got him on therapy, physical therapy. And that is a story that I seldom tell anybody.
You got his finger back on.
It happened to me one other time. The guy pulled the string on his motorbike, Steve. You know, these long motors that they, and he pulled the same god darn thing, the skin off, but the bone was there.
Mm-hmm.
I had done this once before. I said, I'm going to try it again. I didn't have any. I was out of, working in a village close to the Mekong. I can't remember what the hell the name of the village was. But he brought the part in, here again, wrapped in a, I think it was a banana leaf this time. Did you do for me? I said, well, I'll give it a try, and I was it was night. All I had was a Coleman lantern, and I didn't have any. I was out of anesthetic. So I'm going to get you some Mekong. I'm going to get you about 4 or 5 shots of Mekong, because this is going to be a little painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care. So I got him out half grown. I had one assistant. And I worked the same way. I baseball stitched it. I went up, I macerated as much as I could. I cut away all the flesh that I knew that wouldn't go back together.
Important flesh.
Because it had been too long. I knew that flesh was already dead. So I tried it again. This time it didn't work. But you know what? He came to me when it started turning black. I think it was 3 days later. I knew I had to go ahead and amputate. But he came back with coconuts, and I gave him the part so he could burn it in their religion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the second time in my whole life that anything like that ever happened to me.
He
was pulling the string. Anyway, it didn't live.
That's true.
And I've been accused all these years from the guy that helped me, Dick Jansen. We call him the animal. Sewing it all backwards. You put the damn thing, he says, you had his fingernail down there. I said, you lied. But anyway.
No. So the second incident where you sewed the gentleman's finger back on where it didn't take, that was in Vietnam that happened. Is that correct?
That was in Thailand.
In Thailand. Okay. Okay.
In Thailand.
Gotcha. Now, so after your, was there anything else that you remember about your time at Pearl Harbor that's of interest, or things that are memorable, any memorable experiences there?
Yeah, my most memorable.
Okay.
Getting married there.
Oh, did you really?
Wife.
Did you meet your wife there in Hawaii, but you brought her over?
We were high school sweethearts.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
But you brought her over and married her there in Hawaii.
May 5th.
Wow.
May 6th, 1950. Yep.
Well, that's a nice place to have your wedding, because you can have your honeymoon right there in Hawaii. And it's just wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, had you proposed to her prior to going, or?
Wait.
Okay.
Proposed to when I was in China.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep.
And so she was able to stay with you until 1953 when you left in Hawaii. Or did she go back to the United States? Was it?
We went back together, and I got discharged, see.
In 53,
September the 23rd, I got out of the service, right.
Okay.
I had a scholarship to play football for Wofford. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of Wofford in South Carolina.
Yes.
But by this time, I had 2 children, and I knew that I couldn't fulfill both obligations and take care of my kids. So I went to work in the post office. And that didn't work out because I wasn't wounded and went back into service.
So
we all died together.
Okay. Now, when you went back into the Navy in 1955 as an active duty, another active duty
January 10th, right.
Where your first assignment was in Glenview Naval Air Station.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you spend there?
Till 1958.
Okay.
Transferred to the Air Force.
Okay. Now, when you were working in Glenview, was this just basically keeping sailors fit for training and things of that nature?
Naval Air Station. Mm-hmm. We were taking care of the... doing flight physicals, taking care of the well-being, creature comforts of the pilots and their families and that type of thing.
Right? Okay. Right. Pretty routine.
It was an eight to four job type thing. No combat, nothing.
Any interesting events or?
Yeah, one.
What's that?
You know, people love to sit at the end of a runway and watch the airplanes come in.
Yeah.
I do it, you do it, we all do
it. Great.
But on this particular day, they had a tow target coming in on an aircraft, and the tow target released where the people were sitting at the end of the runway, crashed into about five cars. The tow target is very old. The jet was flying rather fast, so we had to go out there, and we probably had 11 majors and maybe 12 CMBs, scratch and bruises, but we had 11 majors that we had to respond to. 11 major problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Broken balloon.
Mm-hmm. But no one was killed.
I'm trying to think. Mm-hmm. I don't think we lost anybody.
Well, that's lucky.
Just, yeah.
That's very lucky.
Very lucky. But it was, that's about the only excitement that...
Well, that's enough.
I worked part-time at Signode Steel. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Signode Steel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got into business when the war came along of making steel strapping. Because we were sending tons and tons of stuff overseas as the war was getting into, the prospect war was coming, so they made all this steel strapping. And I worked there as a gardener, you might say. They had beautiful grounds. But, you know, in those days we were so poor, we couldn't even pay attention because I had three kids at this time, I think, two or three. And I had to find a part-time job to do something to feed my family.
Yes,
so I worked out there and also stocked shelves at one of the local Kroger or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go back to work the next day in the dispensary. And I'd do the flight physicals or whatever was needed back then.
When did you sleep?
Dozed. I was young in those days, too. I didn't need sleep like you don't need sleep, for God's sake.
Right.
But you know, first things first.
Yes, sir. Family first.
So exciting. It was, I love Chicago. That's one of my favorite towns.
Okay.
I just love Chicago. I got to go down there on several occasions and see a couple ball games and take my kids down there.
That's great.
And I think one of the greatest thrills of my life was taking my kids down to see a hockey game. Mm-hmm. And when we wore our uniform, we all got in free. And took him to the hockey game. My two oldest sons were leaving a stadium, and we were coming out of the... Here's the guys getting on the bus to go away. You know, and I asked one of the players, who was the great Detroit Red Wing guy? Jesus.
Asking the wrong person.
I know, but...
I don't know.
Super. I wish I could remember his name. He got off that bus with everybody. His son... program for my kids, and they have never forgotten that.
Yeah.
Gordie Howe.
Okay.
Yep. He took every one of those kids off for his hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great?
That is. That's very nice. Did you see... I guess when you went to Chicago to see the games, you principally saw baseball and hockey? No other sports?
We went to see hockey, baseball. I'm not much of a boxing fan, so I didn't know that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to take my kids down and see.
Take them in to see that stuff.
Yeah. We went to the zoo,
mm-hmm.
Lincoln Park Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Those
things. Yeah. Good family stuff.
Yeah.
Now, were you able to bring your parents, your folks up to visit much then? Were they still alive?
My father and mother?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. And a follow-up question to the toe target story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, did they change the policy after that, that people could not drive to the ends of the runways like that?
They put signs up, but they never worked.
But they didn't enforce it.
Low-flying airplanes.
Right, they didn't enforce it. That comes later. Comes much later.
It never works. We have it at the end of our runway at Hurlburt.
Mm-hmm.
No flying airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
No park here, but they still do.
Yeah.
You know, take your chances.
Right. But I would imagine now the fencing is far enough out where it's a little bit safer for people.
Yeah, it is at Hurlburt.
I'm surprised it's not controlled more for security purposes, that access like that. I guess there's only so much they can do, but...
Hurlburt is well secured.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They can penetrate if they want to, for Christ's sakes. They can do anything they want. We take all the precautions in the world and they'll find a way to penetrate. Well, we have, I'm sure you're aware of this, we have penetration exercises all the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are even companies that are hired out
to
see if security can be penetrated. Yeah.
But you still find people that are very smooth talking and, I'm lost, I'm a tourist, and,
mm-hmm.
Can you help me get here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we run into these people. When I was working
mm-hmm.
In that sort of environment, we were taught everything in the book,
mm-hmm.
but there's still a book that they got to that mm-hmm. you have to.
Things that haven't been written about.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then when you left the naval... you were there. Let's see here. Now, you left the naval the naval air station in 1958.
Yeah, I did.
And then you went to...
Holloman
Air Force Base. And that's when you worked in the flight surgeon's office, mm-hmm. the NCOIC of the flight surgeon's office, and also as a sled test subject.
Subject, right.
Right.
That was at the human tolerance branch.
Yes. And this was, human tolerance is in terms of aircraft flight and the effects of high G-forces, that kind of stuff. What was it for?
Those riding sleds.
Sleds. So.
Sled test.
But sleds and what was that data collected for? Just to see what the effects
of... What they were doing, there were five, is I think I told you that. Mm-hmm. They were testing the values, physiological values
mm-hmm.
on my body
mm-hmm.
if they put me through 17 Gs or 15 or 20. The most I ever pulled was 44. The most that was ever pulled and still alive was 86.6. That was Eli Beeling.
86.6.
Anyway, strap me in a sled just like this. Like
mm-hmm.
this.
Okay.
Teeth in. Elbow.
You had some kind of brace? Teeth?
Rubber teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Rubber
mm-hmm.
teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Strap me in this
with your arms crossed.
Everything's wired. Or they could have been this way.
Okay.
Everything's wired. My legs are wired.
Mm-hmm.
My heart is wired. Everything's wired.
They have electrodes attached to you to collect
everywhere,
the data.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere except my testicles.
Okay.
I'm serious.
All around your head as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm the guy that pulled the switch.
Mm-hmm.
The countdown would start at 15. We were using powder... kegs at that time, powder charges.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what they use for artillery or guns?
Similar,
mm-hmm.
very similar.
Yeah.
But they weren't sometimes grained like they should have been.
Okay.
The powder could have been a little stronger, or or the powder could have been too much.
Mm.
Anyway, the powder keg was right by my side, or very close to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a sled. I decide to go after 15 to 1, then I pulled.
Okay.
If I pulled, I was going. I was fired.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it was stopped.
It's, right. And they could judge the G forces, or they could predict
the G forces.
Well, the G forces
were already determined. Hopefully,
right. But based on how much powder they put back there, or
that was the program.
Yeah.
But sometimes they were screwed.
Okay.
But everything that they were doing, mm-hmm. was the information they were getting,
mm-hmm.
was off my blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
off my pulse rate,
mm-hmm.
off my coherence,
mm-hmm.
off my eyes,
mm-hmm.
annihilation or mm-hmm. constriction,
mm-hmm.
off flushness. Everything was evaluated.
They have video of this as well?
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you a picture of it.
Okay, I'd like to see that.
When I was riding.
How through. Long did the ride last?
Depending on how long the ride was going to be.
Okay, in terms of?
What we call the bopper.
Mm-hmm.
17 seconds. That's all.
It's an eternity.
It is when you're on.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When you're on the sled, that must be
when
feel like an eternity.
When you're on the 6 mile sled, it's quite a lot longer. Yeah. And this is where you're traveling at 641 miles an hour.
Just below the speed of sound. Just a little bit below.
And your eyes are covered with glasses, of course.
Yes.
But behind that, you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in such a rigid, and the G forces against you,
mm-hmm.
press you so back, so far.
Mm-hmm.
You're wondering during this very fast but short ride whether this is it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You
know. Were there
it
any?
It was a marvelous job. You'd love it. You would, Steve. You'd love it.
Did it hurt at all?
The one when I busted out my kidney.
That was the 46?
44.
Oh, 44?
44.4.
44.4 G test.
No, it wasn't tested. That it wasn't supposed to be. It was a mistake.
It wasn't supposed to be at 44.4.
No. Well, it was supposed to be a 17.
And it ended up being a 44.
It was a mistake.
And it broke your kidney.
It knocked me out and broke my left kidney. Yeah.
Did your kidney recover?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But
it
still
took me a while before I could get back on status.
Yes, sir.
See, we were on what you call status. You had to be evaluated each time before you rode. If your heart wasn't doing good,
mm-hmm.
or your
mm-hmm.
pulse was too heavy, or mm-hmm. your body was too heavy, or you ate something that you shouldn't have the night before, or drank something the night before,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't get on that sled.
Now, were you supposed to not eat or drink anything, or were there just
foods
you had to stay away from?
No. Normal diet, as long as you didn't overindulge.
Okay.
They wanted to keep a certain weight factor,
mm-hmm.
and we had to do exercise constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted what they were going for the guys that were going to go to the moon. This is what we were the preamble to that job. And I'm very, very proud to have
yes,
been part of that.
That's remarkable.
Now,
were you there when the 86.6 G test occurred?
Eli Beating?
Mm-hmm.
I think. Had they sent me to Saudi Arabia then or not? I don't know if I left for Saudi or I was there. I can't remember.
Okay.
I know it happened.
Yeah.
I knew Eli Beating very well. And he recovered, but he never flew again.
Really?
We call flying.
Yeah, yeah. On the sled, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he ever recovered.
Was there real physical damage done to him?
These type of things.
Kind
of
shakes?
This every time you get off the sled, you had terrible cases of the shakes. Because of the impact that your body has suffered. I saw Eli, I think before I went into the commandos, I saw him. I think he was still doing well, but he was never returned to status. Superman, just super individual.
Did it have permanent effects on him?
I never asked him. I asked Joe Kettinger about it one time. And Joe was evasive, so I didn't pursue the initiative.
Okay.
We were all test people. It's kind of a fraternity of people that you bond with and you care about. In my purview, he's a hero. You know.
What's Eli's last name again?
Beating. B-E-E. Did I say three E's?
No, B-E-E.
D-I-N-G.
D-I-N-G.
Eli Beating.
Okay. And Joe is the one that he holds the current high altitude jump record.
2,800 feet, right?
So you guys were real, real daredevils.
We were guinea pigs.
Yeah, but voluntary guinea pigs, which means you're daredevils. All right, but 102,800 feet for Joe Kittinger. That's amazing.
Yes. And you love it. I just wish you could be down there this year.
I do too. I do too.
I wish you could. But you'll come along.
Now, with Eli Beating's 86.6 G test, was that an accident as well? As far as they didn't intend it to be that high?
It had to be. I can't confirm or deny that, but
they couldn't have done
it
intentionally.
It had to be, yeah.
And that's the highest anyone's ever sustained?
To my knowledge.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
To my knowledge.
That is unbelievable. Okay. What other interesting things did you do down there at Holloman? Well, what was your daily routine like in terms of being the NCOIC of the Flight Surgeon's Office?
That was routine. That was pilots had to come in for annual physicals and ran them through the routine BP, you know, cough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Turn your head and cough, and you ask them how long you had that cough. And we just kid around.
Oh, yeah.
I'd make them get urine tests, you know, and get. That's about it. This is probably the most exciting story.
Okay.
I don't know. I told it to somebody last night. I don't know if you were in the group.
Okay. I don't think so.
We were going. Joe Kittinger, and I can call him that because we're very close friends, was checking out two aspiring gondola pilots. You know the gondola.
You mean the
They call it a non-dirigible aerostat.
Okay.
It's a gondola.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. There's three of them in this gondola. They took off at 4:30 to 5 o'clock that afternoon. Joe was going to check them out to be pilots.
Okay.
They were going to do touch and goes. Going to show them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah. There's a Major Kaufman and a Captain Fulgham were their names. I'm in an ambulance underneath. We're going over the San Andreas Mountains. They got lights on their gondola.
Mm-hmm.
They see my red light on the ambulance. We're watching each other go through Ruidoso, Cloudcroft, and all the way over to Walker Air Force Base.
Okay.
So I follow them all night. Everything is copacetic. I'm the ground crew medic. We get over to, over the San Andreas Mountains, we get to within the range of Walker Air Force Base. Then I get in, turn, put my ambulance here and get an H-21. Do you know what that is?
The banana?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got an H-21. Had all my equipment, I transferred it into there. It's about dark 30, mm-hmm. about this time. It's breaking dawn.
Yeah, early in the morning.
And Joe is touch and goes. They're in this big pasture full of, I guess, prime cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about 25, maybe 30 feet off the ground in a dust devil field. You know the dust
mm-hmm.
devils?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a little
dumped
mini tornado.
All three of them out. All three of them out of the gondola. I'm watching through the H-21. I was on mic. I said, land immediately. We got a problem. So I landed. They landed. I ran over to the gondola. The leading edge of the gondola, about 700 pounds empty,
mm-hmm.
had hit Fulgham on his helmet. Joe was cosmetically cuts and bruises, tumbleweed, and this kind of crap. Kaufman was okay. He had a limp from the impact, but he was okay. But Fulgham started to develop a big hematoma.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it coming. And his eyes were starting to turn black, all within a very short period of time. So
mm-hmm.
I stuffed all of them into the H-21, got them all in. Joe helped me carry Fulgham over there. The cowboy, if anything is funny, the cowboy comes running out of his ranch or whatever the hell he's in,
mm-hmm.
shaking his fist at me. He says, because all his cattle broke the fences.
Out of fear.
Yeah, when the
mm-hmm.
gondola hit,
mm-hmm.
see?
Mm-hmm.
And the helicopter landed.
Mm-hmm.
He says, God damn it, my cattle are going through the fences. I said, sir, I'm not a cowboy. I got a problem here. I got to get these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other offending thing. It was a classified mission. Okay.
Yeah.
Get him in the helicopter.
Uh-huh.
Get him to Walker Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
It's still about 7:15. People are starting to come to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to keep these people all concealed.
Because it's a classified
mission. Yes, right. So Joe and I put Fulgham on this way. Kaufman's limping behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into the emergency room. I told everybody in the emergency room, I said, I'm sorry, you all have to leave. We're here on a specific mission. And I have to use your facility. Well, who in the hell are you? I said, trust me. I'm a sergeant from the Holloman Air Force Base. And what I'm doing is what I've been told to do. And Joe says, you better listen to this fucking sergeant or I'm... That's Joe.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they all disappeared. So I called my boss, Joe Ganey. No, I didn't call my boss first. I called the flight surgeon there at Walker Air Force Base.
Okay.
I said, sir, I got three people that have been injured in a gondola accident. It's a classified mission. I can't go any further with you. He said, sergeant, I want you to go home, sober up, and when things get better, call me back.
Yeah.
I said, okay. So I called the next flight surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you've been out all night, haven't you? I said, okay. So I called the hospital commander. I said, sir, I got a Colonel House, is I think his name. I can't
mm-hmm.
remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's all documented somewhere. I said, Colonel House, I got three people. An injury in a gondola accident. I need your help. I'll be right there, Sergeant. He zooms down there. Fired those his flight surgeons. Or told me he did.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he did or didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sewing Joe up cosmetically.
Mm-hmm.
6-0 thread. A little you know, C and B here. Fulghum's head by this time, after I take his helmet off, his fucking head is getting like this.
Oh, God.
And his eyes are turning really black.
Yeah. Some major hematoma.
And I said, Doc House, do you want me to aspirate? You want me to go ahead and start aspirating and take mm-hmm. some of this fluid
yeah.
off?
Yeah.
He says, no. He says, Sergeant, why don't you wait till you get back to Holland? He says, I'll get you an unpressurized or pressurized aircraft. I'll get you a C-54 and put all of you on board because we don't want to stir up any more of the interest around here. We'll keep it as... So I said, fine, I really appreciate that. So after I got Joe done here and Fulghum got him a little salve or whatever I did for him, but Fulghum... I was getting bigger and bigger. I'm not kidding you. I've seen a lot of hematomas in my life, but this damn thing was really getting it grossed out. So the C-54 comes up there, lands. I carry Joe Kittinger's got Fulghum on one side. I got him on the other, and this redheaded nurse had to know what was going on. She peeks out the door and peeks out the window, and there was a black sergeant. We saw him peeking out there. They knew we had an alien taken. That is how one of the stories started.
Oh, for crying out loud.
And that's true to this day. That's exactly how.
He looked like an alien.
Exactly, because his eyes by this time were totally black. His head was like this. He couldn't walk. And he was shorter than all of us. And this is exactly how
that's
I looked.
Too funny.
It is. It's too true.
Oh, that is too funny. So
I was interviewed by the Air Force, came down to interview me. And Joe, they went from me to Joe. We sat there and told them the same story. But they don't want to let it go, see. They're making big bucks on this.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
But I thought I had to share that.
Oh, that's hilarious. He looked like an alien.
Exactly the way it started. And anyway, we got back to Holloman Air Force Base, and Fulghum's wife is there. And when, of course, I took him off the airplane, she saw him, and she fainted.
Oh, God. Oh, the poor woman. Oh, no.
So that was some of my exciting times.
Were there a lot of gondola tests and training there?
Well, Joe was the primary trainee for all the, just the high flights.
Yeah, the high altitude flying.
Yeah, the high altitude flights, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they try to outfit those to your knowledge, or if you can talk about it, I don't know. But did they try to outfit those for intelligence gathering as well? Because, boy, up at that altitude, but nothing else can see you, nothing else can pick you up. Seems like a pretty interesting platform to use.
Ask that question again.
Would they use did they ever test to use the gondolas for high altitude intelligence gathering? Whether it be electronic
or
photographic?
That I don't know. I know they used it for Joe's jumps.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they probably did.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Be interesting.
My only vast interest was following him.
Yes.
Because I was out there. Did I tell you that I was out there for the 76,400 jump?
Okay.
Met him on the ground when he landed. I was his personal medic.
Okay.
And I was out here for 74,600 jump. And I wasn't there for the record jump. They sent him to. They sent me to Saudi Arabia. But when Joe would land, I had mission whiskey. I always had a case, and it was old granddad. And whenever when he got down safely, and we unsuited him and so forth, I'd pull the cork off that old granddad and we'd throw it away, and Joe and I and the crew would all drink that bottle of old granddad.
How many in the crew?
Ground crew, the guys that chased the gondola down, there were probably eight of us entirely, right?
Okay.
But we'd all have a celebration.
Was anybody else up in the gondola with him? Or was he up in there alone?
On his
test flights, when he'd go up in the gondola to jump.
On the crash that I just told you about, where Kaufman and...
No, not the, not the crash.
No,
the jumps
no,
where
no,
he,
no.
Where he
no,
made...
No, 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 no.
He was the only one on the gondola. Okay.
Believe me.
And he was in a fully pressurized, basically a space suit.
Oh, yeah,
space
absolutely.
Suit. Same kind of suit they had the guys in the U-2s in.
Oh, yeah.
SR-71, and then the space
absolutely.
Program.
Absolutely.
Okay.
He had one problem.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he could come to one of his briefings, because he gives
I'd
such a great
briefing.
I'd
love to hear it. Yeah.
Everything was heated, I guess, mm-hmm. with sensors or mm-hmm. however the hell they do it. But this right hand the heat problem gave out on him, and he almost froze his hand off. But he did.
What were the temperatures up there?
At 102,800 feet, 150 below zero, or something like that. Yeah. He's an amazing man.
You aren't kidding. Wow.
Very amazing man.
So what took you to Saudi Arabia?
I went into the Air Force and hadn't had a tour in the Air Force, and they were going to send me to somewhere in France. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the Air Force bases in France. I said, well, no, I'd rather go to Saudi Arabia and just get it over with and come back.
Okay.
I said, but I would like to predicate it on me coming back and getting into research again. Because so for those reasons, they sent me over there and let me have my assignment coming back working in research.
Okay. So That was from 58 to 59?
No.
For your Saudi Arabia tour?
60.
Oh, 60.
60. 60 to 61.
Okay. Oh, that's right, because you were... Okay. So from 58 to 60, you were at Holloman.
Holloman, right.
And then from 60 to 61, Saudi.
We came back in July of 1961
mm-hmm.
to Saudi. And... got interviewed by the commander for the Air Commando.
Okay. That's when you went to Air Commando training.
Yes. Okay. September. Well, I wasn't accepted.
You weren't.
I wasn't.
Well, the hell not.
I'll tell you a story. Do you want to listen to this?
Oh yes, absolutely.
I don't want to bore you.
That's not possible. I want to hear it. Go ahead.
General Hooks was the AFMDC commander, mm-hmm. Air Force Missile Development Center commander. Mm-hmm. And this project came up. There was a lot of whispers on a brace that there's a secret project going on.
Mm-hmm.
Air Commandos. They call it Jungle Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard that
one? Yes,
word.
Sir. Yes.
Okay, Jungle Jim. And my boss, Joe Ganey, super guy. You know, I never really had a bad boss. I must tell you. I just never really had a
You're
bad
You're very fortunate.
Well, like you said earlier, it works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
My God. And Joe Ganey was an enormous, formerly a great surgeon, but he developed this crippling arthritis, and he and I just hit it off. I don't know why we hit it off. But he'd come down to my office. We were using gold and steroids in those days to try to subvert some of the pain and anguish and from this. And General Hooks was another victim of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a two-star, or it could have been a three-star. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But General Hooks would come to my office. He wouldn't go to the immunization clinic. He always came to my office, and we always chatted, and he liked the way I gave him his butt injection. I don't know why, but anyway, that's
mm-hmm.
the way it developed.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, when this Jungle Gin thing came out, all the whispers started on the mess, Colonel Ganey came to me and he says, Hap, are you interested in going in Jungle Gin? I said, I don't know much about it. I said, but if it involves getting involved with something, some sort of combat, yeah, I want to go. He said, well, I don't want to lose you. But I also don't want to stop you, because it would probably be one of the stepping stones to you getting higher rank and blah, blah. He said, are you willing to take chances? I said, shit, I've done it all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Why stop now? He said, I'll see what I can do. You had to be interviewed by a full colonel or above. Nobody. They asked you 5 questions. So when my name was finally called,
mm-hmm.
we were all, there were about 6 of us in the room waiting to be called.
Mm-hmm.
Of all career fields, engine men, pilots, navigators, medics,
mm-hmm.
all the above.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there on thumbs. Someone come in and only last 2 minutes. Because if you don't answer the first 5 questions to their satisfaction, you're dismissed without prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
No prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
You're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
So my turn finally came. And the questions were, and I don't, because I'm going to ask you these questions, then you're going to forget them. And don't you ever repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So but the questions essentially are, would you be willing to go to airborne training? Yeah, sure. Would you be willing to go into foreign countries under austere conditions and work in jungle areas? Or would you be willing to live off the economy and put yourself and your counterparts in jeopardy? Are you willing to go into combat fully armed, blah, 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 whatever they were? Those are the first 5. I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then you went to 15 more questions. If you answered the first 5, then they would go to 15 more.
Mm-hmm.
And they were more about your family, your
mm-hmm.
finances,
mm-hmm.
How are you going to take care of your families in the event of your demise? Are you willing to tell the foreign country that you work in that you're not from America? Are you willing to take... And those are some hard questions
mm-hmm.
to answer, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I answered them all.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I was like pins and needles waiting to hear. I went to Doc Ganey and said, Doc, I haven't heard a word. So Hap, I didn't do anything to stop it. And I finally got the word, well, you're not acceptable. And I couldn't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
There were no written things. It was
mm-hmm.
just all oral because
mm-hmm.
I didn't write anything down for
mm-hmm.
records.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm denied. I said, shit, I... Why would I be denied? I'm in great physical shape.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything I can. I was flying rescue out there. And General Hooks came in my office for a shot. And I told him the same story I just told you. I said, I don't understand why I was denied, General Hooks. And he says, well, he says, you know, you've got a damn fine record. And I don't think they want to lose you around here. I said, but. He says, would you like me to intercede? I said, would you? A week later, I was gone. And that's exactly how it happened to me. So they sent me to Lackland Air Force Base,
mm-hmm.
had to meet 2 psychologists, 2 psychiatrists, interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
You had to stand in a bucket. Dumb questions. We had to do all the Rose Sarge tests.
Mm-hmm.
You had to stand in a bucket of water, naked, hold out your arms as long as you can. Have you ever tried that?
Mm-mm.
You stand in this bucket of water,
mm-hmm.
totally naked,
mm-hmm.
ice water.
Mm-hmm. With your arms out.
With your arms out. It's
mm-hmm.
like this.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking you, how did you like having sex with your mother? Just trying to get to you.
Mm-hmm. Just mind games.
Oh, yeah, mind games all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't dare drop your arms. And they're asking banal,
mm-hmm.
some sophisticated, some stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when's the last time you did so-and-so and blah-blah.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going on your arms by this time. They had to pull my arms down because I was locked. They actually had to pull my arms down. And if you've ever tried it, try sometimes just for your own edification.
Mm-hmm.
Just give yourself a shot standing naked in it, and you'll find out what it looks like. From that...
Mm-hmm. How long did you have to stay there?
I guesstimate 21 minutes. I guesstimate.
Okay. That's a good long time.
Then you go get your jocks.
Locked
then
on,
you sit
lactic
in,
acid.
Yeah, go get your shorts on mm-hmm. or whatever you're wearing. And you get this psychiatrist sitting there throwing a rubber ball against the wall. He says, well, I don't think you'd make very good commando. He says, I don't think you have the stamina. I don't think throwing this goddamn rubber. He's trying to get your attention. And every once in a while, you'd miss to see if I'd go grab it, which I wouldn't do. I'd just let him throw his own fucking rubber ball, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, that's right, my ball. Why don't you pick it up? I said, sir, you're throwing it. If you want me to pick it up, you ask me politely, I'll pick up the rubber ball. He says, you're not an arrogant person, are you? I said, no, sir, but I can be. If the need arises, then he'd start to shit again. Then we go to the next goofy guy. Really? Sound all empty. And then, of course, then after that, we'd go back to Hurlburt, up to Holloman.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were selected from the four... two psychologists and two psychiatrists, then we were selected to go to Lackland Air Force, or
mm-hmm.
to Stead Air Force.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Stead Air Force, survival training. And I wrote this long article on that, and that's the one I want to send you.
Okay, okay. I look forward
so
to seeing
that.
We
don't even need to talk about
that. Yeah, we can talk about your survival training. Or you will get the copy of that if you're
survival
training.
I told you I would.
Yeah.
I wrote it's the whole genesis. I wrote this for Hank Holzer, who's
mm-hmm.
going to be one of our guest speakers down here.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, how did I get to be an air commando? So I wrote that. A lot of the things that you've already heard tonight,
mm-hmm.
I'll send it to you and the other documents that I promised you.
Okay. Thank you.
So it precludes you from to have to go over and over all of
Well, I'll look them over, and if I have any follow-up questions,
of course, I had to debrief. I didn't talk about my trips to Laos,
mm-hmm.
Except in that small
mm-hmm.
document I gave you, mm-hmm. The years that I was over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when you got back from Saudi Arabia and you first applied for the air commandos, you were at Holloman or at Hurlburt again? Where were you at that point? When you came back from Saudi, where were you?
I went right back to Holloman.
You did go right back to Holloman.
That was one of the...
That was one of the contingents of
me going back. You know, I could go back there and work and research.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Right.
And how long... At what point did you finish your air commando training, and where did you end up in terms of your final duty station for the air commandos?
January 10th, 1962, I reported to Hurlburt.
That was when you went to Hurlburt. Okay.
And then we went, we were still called Jungle Gyms.
Mm-hmm.
And we were designated the 4400th Combat Cruise Training Squadron. So every day our job was train,
mm-hmm.
go out and throw hatchets, we'd go out and throw axes, we'd run 5 miles every day.
Mm-hmm.
We would get up every morning at 5, start this, stay in shape, get
mm-hmm.
ready to go,
mm-hmm.
wait for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody at immunizations up,
mm-hmm.
that was my job.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of the lame, sick, and wounded, and
mm-hmm.
blah, blah. Right.
What were the most common injuries during this training?
We didn't have many because they were afraid to get washed out.
Yeah.
They kept any of their injuries very, very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some hemorrhoid things. Yeah. I've done, you know, small skin things, mm-hmm. fall down,
mm-hmm.
you know, sidewalk rash,
yeah.
road rash, whatever the hell, but yeah. nothing serious.
Nothing serious.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, no.
And for your participation in this, were you receiving any kind of additional training, or were you yourself boning up on tropical illnesses and things of that nature, since you know, yeah. more than likely you'd find yourself in a tropical environment?
Okay.
Did that training come later for you, or you just learned it on the job while you were in Southeast Asia?
Did it come later for me?
Yeah, as far as did you get any additional training in jungle illness or tropical illnesses? That usually your knowledge of that came when you came to Southeast Asia
yes.
on the job?
Okay.
We've, well, at what point, let's say you were finished with your training in early 62. And where did you go in 62?
Vietnam.
You went to Vietnam. That's right, Ben Hoan, the Attachment 2 Alpha. What did you understand about American policy in Southeast Asia at that point, 1962, that you remember in terms of you know, what were we trying to accomplish there? Of course, this is President Kennedy. You know, what were American forces trying to do in Southeast Asia, and Vietnam in particular?
Win the war. That was the only thing I was sent over there to do is to... I was not political.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been political. It was not my forte. I let the people at the top worry about that. My job was to take care of the men.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my job.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many men were there at Ben Hoa?
When I first went in...
Mm-hmm.
These numbers may not be correct, but
I
will say 120.
Okay.
Probably 120. Well,
I guess in the army, that would be about a company, company-sized element.
We had C-47 pilots, B-26 pilots, A-1E pilots, T-28 pilots. It could have been more.
Mm-hmm.
We had all the support
mm-hmm.
folks.
Mm-hmm.
You had our gunners. We had our medics. We had our comm guys.
Mm-hmm. Maintenance crews, all that
maintenance
kind of stuff.
Crews. Probably 120, 25, mm-hmm. somewhere in that area.
Okay. And as an air commando combat medic, is that what you were considered at this
yes.
point? What was your primary job?
My primary job was taking care of my people.
Okay, but providing standard medical care.
Yeah.
What were some of the major illnesses and problems that the men faced there? And we are talking
we
about men here.
We were all restricted to the base, so we had no indiscretion with an area diseases at that time.
Okay, so no VD.
No VD.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a big hangovers.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, things you don't want to mention. Developed some vitiligo, psoriasis,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some of the skin diseases, mm-hmm. that type of thing. Visual problems. If somebody needed a new pair of glasses, I didn't have any. You know, I didn't have resources for that, so I had to send them to Saigon. We waived all annual physicals, so I didn't do any of the annual physicals.
Mm-hmm.
Gastrointestinal diarrhea, this type of thing. Change of food.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in tents, mosquitoes, we didn't, we took the prophylactics for malaria,
mm-hmm.
primacin, chloroquine tablets,
Did you regulate that, make sure that everyone took those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. We did some sewing up jobs on people that decided they could climb through the concertina wire. You know.
Just trying to sneak out.
Dumb shit.
Mm-hmm.
No, they were trying to sneak in.
Oh, they were trying to sneak in.
Well, they had a concertina wire between the NCO or Rosie's canteen or whatever you want to call it, and they'd get too much in their cups and, well, let's walk through the concertina wire, you know, mm-hmm. goofy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All the little dumb things, but nothing major.
Okay.
Some fisticuffs.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest, probably the most profound thing happened to me personally, not to me personally, but being the... We used to have tent parties. This group would have their tent party and blah, blah. You didn't have anything else to do, so you got together and talked over the day's activity. Always met the airplanes when they came in the evening. Always had mission whiskey for them if they wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And a debrief, and then they'd go have a tent party or something. But we were... In 62, they started to infiltrate DET-9 people. Are you familiar with DET-9?
No, sir.
Okay, they were not out of Hurlburt Field. They were Detachment 9 people DET-9 PACAF,
mm-hmm.
Pacific Air Force Command, and augmentees.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if we sent one of our guys back for any reason, family problems, Red Cross crap. They sent I didn't send one of our people.
Okay.
So we resented this.
Yeah.
And we wanted only, and rightfully, wrongfully so, we all knew each other. But anyway, this developed into a few animosity type things.
Mm-hmm.
But this one guy wasn't invited to a tent party, if you will. So he got hold of a WP. Renee, you're familiar with
mm-hmm,
WP?
Yeah, White Phosphorus.
Yes. Threw it in the tent. And the only thing that I didn't have, copper sulfate's the only thing that will
mm-hmm.
neutralize,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have any. So I had to smother him with... blankets, which made it worse, and a high dose team on morphine. I knew I couldn't survive. I knew he wouldn't survive because he really took a major blast of it. And I didn't have the damn Coulter sulfate, and I put water on him, which doesn't help.
No.
Blankets don't help. Nothing helps.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him I OD'd him on morphine just to relieve his enormous pain, and scrambled a C-47 to take him to Saigon, but I lost him on the way. I just couldn't do anything else.
What can you do?
But you always beat yourself.
Yes, sir.
For not having the proper equipment to
little
things like
take a white phosphorus grenade.
Yeah, threw it in the tent because he was mad because he wasn't invited to the party. Well, we had those things were all available. Everything, guns were available. I had five submachine guns myself. I had a Uzi, a Thompson. I had all the things you could have.
But that
wasn't that frequent. We had a few frags.
What were the
angry at?
Just angry at a superior?
Officer.
An officer?
Yeah.
That early, in 62?
No.
Oh, these were later?
This was later on.
Okay.
About 67. You know, that's
okay.
Later. That's another story.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just didn't... You could leave, but you could not be an asshole.
Yeah.
In those circumstances, and give people with guns, and if there's alcohol around, especially, you're asking for it.
Yeah.
And that's when they take out their hostility.
What happened to the guy that threw the white phosphorus grenade into the tent?
He died.
When you flew him out, he's the guy you flew out. He died.
He was dead on the way.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
There's nothing you can do to save him.
I could not. Bill Brown, great friend of mine, he's the one that flew me over. I had to scramble the airplane about 9 o'clock at night. And I did everything I could. I did dirt, I did water, I did everything I could put him out.
But he's the one that threw the grenade.
No, he threw it. Oh, the guy that threw the grenade.
What happened to him? Yeah,
he was gone the next day.
Right, but was he court-martialed and thrown in prison?
Yeah, excuse me, I misunderstood you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't follow up on the circumstances.
I didn't know if you were interviewed by...
No, we didn't get after-action reports on it.
Well, I didn't know if you were interviewed for the court proceedings. If they tried him...
He was KIA.
No, the guy that threw the grenade.
He was KIA. The guy that got killed, he was a KIA. A lot of accidents were KIA. There were no major investigations.
The guy that died in the white phosphorus accident was carried as a killed in action, not as an accidental killing? As a murder?
Not to my, knowledge, there was no further investigation. I can't say that with full authority.
Right. Understand.
I just don't know the circumstances.
But you're saying is you were never interviewed for a criminal investigation?
Nope.
Okay.
No, hell no.
Okay. Well, that's a tragic story.
Well, it is. There's a lot of tragic stories.
And to take you back to one of the other things you said, there was no interaction between the personnel at Benoit and the civilian population, Vietnamese civilian population? They weren't allowed off base?
There were some on base, but we were not allowed off base. They had a... There was a small bar that we called Rosie's Cantina.
Mm-hmm.
And the geckos were running all around. Just a place to go drink a beer, 33 LaRue, I think they call it. Mommy Bob.
Mommy Bob. Did you care for that beer?
Yeah, and... Wasn't anything else around at the time.
It beat nothing.
I didn't care for the blutes that went with it.
Okay.
Have you ever had a blute?
No.
Okay. You ever wanted one? Or do you know what a blute is?
No, you've confused me. What's a blute?
A blute is a duck egg. It's...
You're a balut in Philippines, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, a half-hatched dog. Vuntit Lung
in
Vietnamese.
Urinate on them and... leaving in the ground for 12 days.
Yeah, half-hatched duck egg.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you open it up, there's a little eye staring at you.
I have had one.
Isn't horrible?
I've had better things, yes. I've tasted better. Let's see. Well, the missions that these men flew, did many of them come back shot up?
We lost two while I was there.
Okay.
Simpson. And Simpson was the first one. Lukasik. And we lost three. O'Neill. Third one. Three that while I was there. The 60s. Yeah.
So they were flying into some hot areas.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know if they were going principally up against VC or NVA or a combination?
No, I can't really answer that truthfully. I just knew they were shot up.
Small caliber or heavy caliber?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Gene
Rossell would know the...
He
knows the circumstances.
Yeah.
Gene was... does a great job on keeping track of all of these events.
Okay. Let's contact him.
Oh, yeah. Billy Chambers was shot down while I was there.
Okay.
He was shot up near Booney Now. Was it Chambers? Yeah, Chambers. Oh, Fox. Fox was a tech sergeant, combat controller. Terry, There was a CIA agent, Fox, and God, I'm sorry, I can't remember the names. They were shot up in a U-10. Fox was marking targets, and they were spotting targets. We think that Fox had a WP on his belt, and small arms hit it, caught the airplane on fire. They crashed, so sent me up the next day. They didn't send me up that night. They sent myself and Joe Orr up there. Joe Orr was a combat controller. And Charlie Jones was the combat controller that was already up there.
Okay.
When we got to the site, they were burned beyond, I mean, they were burned in this position. They were really mad. I had to build another green leaf fire. Just the stench was so bad. And Joe Orr helped me put them in body bags. And God, we took them to Udo. And let me think about this a little further. Oh yeah, I was there while I was. While we were putting them and Billy are in the body bags and recovering them, Chambers got shot down in a T-28, and he landed about, I guess 100 yards from us, but he survived. So we went over to get him out of the airplane. He had a broken back. Robert Calhoun Walker was flying cover. Chambers and Robert Calhoun Walker were flying cover for us while we were recovering. It wasn't a SAR anymore. It was just a
recovery
is all it was. And we were digging them out of that burned up U-10. And these guys were flying cover for us because the bad folks were right close to us and they were trying to ping us. And as Joe and I were recovering him out of the aircraft, Chambers was shot down, and he bellied it in, wheels up, went over there to get him out of the airplane, and he had a broken back. We lifted him out very gingerly and put him on. I had a Stokes at this time, too, for him. Gosh, I'm trying to remember the... It was daytime. Got him into the aircraft and got him up to Saigon. That was another memorable occasion.
Did you have any kind of ground support with you to provide protection in case of an enemy unit came by?
Yeah, we had some Hmong, Montagnard, not Hmong, because we're in Bunin now. The Hmong are in Laos.
Right, Montagnard in Vietnam. My goodness.
That was in
62.
Yeah. My other job. You still want me to talk about this?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
If you feel comfortable talking
about it. No, I don't feel uncomfortable. I'm just trying to make sure. When the Special Forces medic got killed at Van Mikut, they sent me up there. I got up there. Joe Orr went with me. He was combat control. Charlie Jones was there working with Terry. God, I can't remember his last name. Anyway, the first day I'm there, the first day, a little kid picked up. We lived in longhouses with the Montagnard. And the first day I'm there, one of the little kids picked up a weapon, a loaded weapon. I think it was an SKS, but I can't, it could have been a Thompson, and hosed his mother down.
Oh.
You know, one of these shouldn't have done things. So that was my first patient. The next event...
Did she survive?
No. She's fielding good. But the next event that day, this is all on the same day. Mm-hmm. There are twin Montagnard interrogators. And they had a family up there that they had brought in to interrogate. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to like this story. I didn't like it either.
Yes, sir.
But the father wouldn't talk and the mother wouldn't talk, so they took the first baby out and shot him. Okay? They continued not to talk, so they took the next child and shot it. You can't interfere as much as you want to plead not to do that. You can't do it in that country. You can't throw yourself because you're next if you interfere. I felt guilty about this ever since. But
you can't
do it. And then they brought the last child out. And then they shot each one. And I've hated myself ever since, but I couldn't do a thing. I could not do anything.
Did you ever get a chance to find out what they thought they could accomplish by doing that? I mean, all they're going to do is alienate that family and alienate people that live near them.
They'll tell you nothing. These were their interrogators and their executioners. That was the second incident. The third incident, the training of Montagnards on the firing range, one shot the other through the eye, turned around like this to... The last incident that night, thank God, had a long cut. And Joe and I are getting ready to go to bed. It started raining like hell. We're at the long end. And I remember so well, we had mosquito nets, but a great enormous rat jumped on his. Scared the shit out of him. Uh-huh. And me too.
Yeah.
But the prison was out right outside of our building, Steve. Mm-hmm. And it's in the ground. Have you ever seen their prisons?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely in the ground.
And they have like a
with bamboo
over the top.
Yeah, and they grow on, they urinate on them. And it started raining real bad, and the guard got tired of guarding, so he assassinated everybody in the prison. That was my first day in Moody Now, or Bamboo.
How long did you spend there total?
I stayed there until they said, where are we getting another Special Forces medic? But I still dream about that. Anyway.
How long was that that you were in Camp Bamboo? About a couple of weeks, a couple of months?
Probably a month. Month and a half, yeah. Could have been. Because the third or fourth day, I remember they started harassing us. An enormous beehive. They threw the beehive over the fence. Wasp, big wasp, to try to harass us with that. And when the bees were stinging all the kids in the damn village, and I tried to try, you know, rubbing them down with... They used every tactic you can imagine.
Well, who threw the beehive into the camp?
The VC?
The Viet Cong. Just the Viet Cong person just came by, threw it in there.
Oh, yeah. They did all sorts of things.
Jeez.
I was on a... Here I go again. I'm going backwards now a little bit. I went to my first jump training at Tuduk. You know where Tuduk is outside of Saigon? Mm-hmm. Have you been there?
No, I haven't been there.
Okay.
I've been to Saigon.
That's where there was a Special Forces camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to send me to jump training there. I said, sure, I'd rather do this and go back to Benin. Because I was a trolley trooper there, and I could get done a lot faster.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Make my first jump after maybe a couple rides on the trolley.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out on trail with these guys the next day. Everhart, Bill Everhart, Doc Tevis. We were on a part of the training, and we then we went out on the trail. And Doc Tevis was on point. Everhart was on point. Mm-hmm. Tevis was back here with me, and Tevis spotted a guy over here on my either left or right, and he had a Schmeisser. Schmeisser? Is that?
That's a weapon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know it's a weapon. Yeah. I had one too.
That's popular.
I can't remember. Was it a 9mm?
I believe so.
I believe it was. He popped this guy three times. An American GI raincoat on. We ain't found the guy yet. We found the raincoat, but we have not found that guy yet. We know we hit him because there's blood all over the raincoat. I didn't hit him. Doc Tevis said.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Doc, get down. There's a guy here." Boom, 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 boom. Well, he let him have it real mm-hmm. bad.
He dropped the raincoat and got out of there.
He was gone.
Oh, that's amazing.
But we know we hit him.
Yeah.
He knocked the raincoat off him, literally, is what he did with those three shots. Then just a little short time after that, a guy named Redhead guy from Georgia, can't remember his name either, he stepped on the punji stick and, of course, squealed mm-hmm. like hell.
Mm-hmm.
So I took him back to, Tevis and I took him back to Tudyk,
mm-hmm.
and he was allergic to tetanus. And of course, they put chicken shit all over these things. And, so
wild?
I had the great joy. I had no damn antiseptic. I mean, no killing agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to pull this son of a bitch off, and then had a barbed wire on it. Like, can't believe, like a big fish. So I gave him a tongue blade to put in his mouth. And he gave him a shot of Mekong, I think, or something. And I said, "You ain't gonna like this." I said, "But you're in deep, buddy." And it penetrated that steel-booted, and it was in a piece of concrete as well. And he went in deep on it.
Oh my goodness!
But anyway.
Were you able to clean it well enough so it didn't get too infected?
Yeah, I had to go in deep with swabs. That's a hell of it. And that was really the painful part of it. I said, "I got to do this, buddy." I aspirated as much as I could with a syringe, but I still had to go in there with swabs.
Did that kind of stuff ever make you cringe? I mean, just hearing you tell the story is, oh, man.
Oh, there's
makes
nothing
my eyes water.
That you like about
no,
it.
No, of course not.
You had to do.
Of course not.
Something you had to do. Yeah.
Thank goodness there's people like you around.
Different.
Yes, sir. Now, how large was the Special Forces contingent there?
That was 18.
Okay, so about six guys.
Yep. Bill Everhart got killed. One of my favorite FSCs. Went down to Cholon.
Okay.
Are you familiar?
Uh-huh. Cholon, those Chinese district?
Yep. Cut his ears off down there, sent him home to his mother and his dog friends. One of my favorite people. That was in 1962.
How in the hell did they get his home address?
His ear tag, wasn't on his dog tags in those days. Somehow they got it. I don't know. I don't know that answer, but I know it happened. Because we made him a special brick for him. I don't know how, but they had infiltrators everywhere.
In the administration and everything else.
They had
the headquarters.
I don't know that, but I know it happened.
He sent his ears home with his dog tags to his
with his dog tags, yeah. But he was a great guy. Well, I never met a non-great Special Forces guy. They put themselves in some really compromising positions. Really did.
How large was the Montagnard contingent there? About how many people? To include families, soldiers.
In Bundy now?
Yeah, in Bundy now. Let me put
it. Oh, gosh. Oh. 200 families, maybe?
Okay.
200. Probably 200. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So quite a few people.
Pardon?
200 families. Quite a few.
Oh,
yeah.
Total
population is a large number of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And did Did
That's where I got my bracelet. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Number two.
Did I assume that you provided or helped to provide medical assistance and attention to everyone, the whole family's included, as part of the Special Forces contingent there?
Absolutely.
So a lot of clinic work,
that,
with families.
That was very endearing to me. Oh, yes, absolutely.
So that's your introduction, really, then, to like a civic action program, a MedCap?
It, on a very large or smaller scale, yes.
On a smaller scale, yeah.
Right.
Did you find yourself either short of anything, or did you have enough supplies and enough support coming from MACV and from Saigon?
I had it because it was at Benoit.
Okay.
I could get it if I needed it.
You could get it through that chance?
Yeah, right.
To the Air Force.
If I was
going to
stay longer and longer,
mm-hmm.
right, it sent it down to me, right.
Okay.
Right.
And so you had all the antibiotics and all the other stuff that you could possibly need.
Right.
Okay.
And the great thing about using antibiotics over there, erythromycin, tetracycline, mm-hmm. Penicillin, I didn't have to use near the amount
mm-hmm.
because they were never exposed to it.
Yeah.
And if I ever had any questions, I was always skin test to see if there was any allergic reaction
mm-hmm.
so I wouldn't get the shaman on my ass. The shaman gets a little annoyed, too, if you succeed where he fails. So I had to be careful with shamans in almost all cases.
Mm-hmm.
Always respected the shaman, always included him in.
I was just going to ask you that.
Always, absolutely.
Because that makes it, if he's involved in the process, if it's healing from antibiotics or whatever else, if he's there with it,
always got his
he gets
permission.
The credit.
I always get his permission.
Oh, very smart.
Always. I would never go above the shaman.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you able to involve him in a context? I mean, it would seem to me that if the shaman blessed the antibiotic, then it would almost be like... He would be involved.
I always wanted him to have the credit.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I was not ever looking for credit for myself. That's.
But that would be counter to the mission.
Never. This always enhanced the mission by having the shaman involved.
Yes.
Absolutely. And endeared the shaman even further to the people.
Yes. Increased his power.
They're gone.
Yeah.
That his power stays.
Yes, his status.
Our power.
Mm-hmm.
We transfer our power to him.
Yeah. And I assume then that it also happened at the administrative level with the village or with the chief of that particular
Always.
Group.
That's the first thing these doctors asked me about. Some of the questions they wanted to know about.
Mm-hmm.
I said, never, never go into a village and work into a village without first addressing the village, the Puyai Ban,
mm-hmm.
village chief,
mm-hmm.
and never get in front of the shaman.
Mm-hmm.
Always include him in all the things you do,
mm-hmm.
because your success will be far greater.
Yeah.
And remember, the success is not yours, it's theirs.
Yes.
This is where it works over here.
Now, that was the case in Vietnam, and did you find it was also the case in Laos and in Thailand?
In China, everywhere I've served.
Korea,
everywhere I've served. Absolutely. No, it's not me, Jane, you're Tarzan. No.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No. It's not about you.
But I learned that mm-hmm. years and years ago. And it is a good lesson. And the thing it also does... It gets you on tray to the next village or this or that village.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave a village with bad taste, you're not welcome to the next one. The drums are starting to beat all already.
They know.
They know. Absolutely know.
Well, not to oversimplify what happened in the years that followed your initial experience, but... It seems to me that, in general, what the United States did after that is we got away from that. We got away from letting the Vietnamese have responsibility and credit for this war, and we took it upon ourselves. Starting in 1964, after the Gulf of Tonkin incidents, and then after the American buildup of ground forces, we started taking on more of that responsibility and kind of shoved them to the side and said, well, we'll handle it since you can't. How much of a mistake did you think that was in Vietnam, the buildup of the ground war?
I don't want to be the judge of that. I wasn't in on that.
Well, what did you think about it? Did you have any opinions at all when you saw what was happening in the later years? What was your opinion of that?
I guess my opinion was that we didn't involve them training-wise or material-wise. In other words, we started flying the missions. We started getting the air medals. We started getting the Purple Hearts. We started. This is not what we should have been doing. Mm-hmm. We should have been let them fly the mission. They're getting the distinctive flying classes, mm-hmm. and that means a great deal to them. Mm-hmm. That to wear them, and they should have come from us. Mm-hmm. We should have involved them more in the activity. Let them be the credit takers. Mm-hmm. Let them go out there. Mm-hmm. Don't put them in the back seat. Put them in the front seat. Mm-hmm. You get in the back seat. Mm-hmm. Let's fly it that way. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do it initially because they didn't have the training. But we had mm-hmm. to train them, and once we did, fine, turn it over to them.
Right.
The Mon in Laos were some of the finest pilots in this world. Mm-hmm. But God, they would fly. They had many, many more missions than our pilots ever thought of having. They'd go up, reload, and come back. Reload and come back, and reload and come back. I had one pilot was shot down 4 times. Toa was his name. Marvelous pilot. Out of a T-28, he jumped out of it. I didn't even have a Yankee seat for him. He got out on the wing and jumped out.
Now that's amazing. Got on the wing?
Got on the wing and jumped out of the T-28. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Four times. And went back up again. What a marvelous guy. I think he's flying for Philippine Airlines now.
What a gutsy son of a gun.
Oh, a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
A real tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I met a lot of people like this.
Yeah.
There's only one sad incident that happened to me personally. Oh, there's a lot of them, but with me and Joe Ma. When I worked with General Ma.
General Ma?
Ma, M-A.
Mm-hmm.
The chief of the Lao Air Force.
What year about was this?
Ma was executed in 70, I think, or 69.
Okay.
So it was probably 66, or
66,
it could have been
67.
70. I just don't remember when he was executed.
Yeah.
We were jumping at Sano, parachuting, and two of the guys, we shouldn't have been jumping, the wind was too high.
Okay.
I'm dancing around.
That's okay. Yeah, that's
right. Anyway. And the wind was too high, and a couple of the guys developed bleeding from the ears, hit the ground pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I took them from Sano to Savannakhet. And General Ma was there when we got there with these two young men. I had him in the back of a six-pack. And his doctor, Som Chit,
mm-hmm.
what didn't happen to be at the event, but he did see the two. He was very concerned about his people. And he asked his doctor, he says, Doctor, what should I do? His Lao doctor. He says, well, he says, I think I can treat him here locally without a problem. Then he looks at me. He says, what would you, Doc? What would you do? I said, personally, Joma, I think they should be flown in a helicopter or pressurized aircraft to Vincennes to Operation Brothership Hospital. I think they have concussions that we can't handle here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctor lost face. And I didn't want that to ever happen. Then he looked at his doctor. He says, Doc Lutz said, do. See, I didn't want that to happen.
And you had to balance his losing face and the health and the welfare of those men.
I talked to him later. I said, look, I said, I don't have the care, you don't have the care that we can take care of them. Well, they're both bleeding from the ears. We don't have the instruments to resolve their problems. But Operation Brotherhood, which is a Filipino hospital up there, they have instruments. They have a ward they can sleep on. I said, all we got is this, we hadn't built this hospital yet.
Mm-hmm.
All we've got is a small clinic. And I don't want to see these two men die because we don't have them. And he got mad at me. Wow. But he ultimately forgave me. But he did not want to be overridden in front of his commander.
Yeah.
And he put me in a position, and it was the right decision,
mm-hmm.
I hope, to this day, and I think to this day it was.
Mm-hmm. Did you see those men again afterwards, after they came back?
No, I never saw them again.
Okay.
They were probably, I hope, cured and sent back to jumping or mm-hmm. whatever their duty was.
Mm-hmm.
But you seldom ever get after-action reports.
Yeah.
You know, seldom ever get it.
Okay.
If you make a mistake, you get it.
Okay.
If you make a mistake, you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I believe I made the right decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But see, I had a great rapport with the Filipinos, and they would keep me informed.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get to Vincian that often, so I never knew. Dr. Bingbing out in King Cock, I had a great rapport with him
mm-hmm.
when I took patients out to him, because he had a 50-bed hospital. He would always inform me of the circumstances
mm-hmm.
of how they either survived or died.
Mm-hmm. So you're working with a number of different nationals here, not just Vietnamese, Lao, mm-hmm. Thai,
right.
Filipino.
Right.
Okay.
Sure was.
Okay.
Right. That's what I, what we tried to do is make it a community caring for each other type of event,
mm-hmm.
right? Supplying each other with the things that they needed, and they would supply me with the things that I needed,
mm-hmm.
and blah, blah. We trade off. The doctors at Sano, the French doctors, I work with them, the Filipino doctors, right?
Okay.
It was great. I mean, it was very gratifying work. I can't tell you enough about it.
Seems like it.
Well, I could go on and on hours and hours.
Yes, sir.
But, it was very, very gratifying for me.
A few final questions for this session. You mentioned already that you really were not a very political person, but
no.
I wondered what your opinion of President Kennedy was. What did you think of him? And especially his message, very idealistic, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, establishment of a Peace Corps.
That appealed to me a great deal.
It seems absolutely. Like it would be consistent with your personal philosophy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No quarrel with that at all.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when were you back? You were back.
He sets the stage for a lot of these programs that are mm-hmm. right now still going on.
Yes, sir.
He cared.
Mm-hmm.
He demonstrated that.
Mm-hmm.
He put one of Sergeant Shriver, I think, in charge of the Peace Corps. Or one of his relatives, I can't remember,
mm-hmm.
developed it. Let's do it. Let's mm-hmm. go out and help these third country nationals. Let's
mm-hmm.
do all we can for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is much better than bombs and bullets, for God's sakes.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Hell yes. If we can work on that level
mm-hmm.
of understanding and teaching each other, there's still many things I have to learn. There's still many things I can also teach.
Mm-hmm.
And although at my age, it's more, you know, I can't commit myself as much as I used to.
Of course.
But I still have some of the expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not up to date on all the new medicines. For God's sakes, those change daily for bucks reasons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's true.
Oh, yeah. Get a new drug and make more money.
Of course.
Patents run out, so you need the new drug so you can get the patent.
It's our way of life. I'm not
mm-hmm.
knocking it. But
oh, no.
What's wrong with the old drugs that worked so well and so But in some cases, the bugs are winning, mm-hmm. and they have to keep fighting them. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, with antibiotic-resistant strains of microbes and things like that. Yeah.
My God, the bugs are winning in a mm-hmm. lot of cases.
Yeah. Microevolution.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you were back in the United States when he was assassinated, yes?
Yes, I was at Maxwell Air Force Base, Academic Instructor School. I certainly was. One of the few times where I was back in the States. Mm-hmm.
How did that affect you personally? Did it affect you at all?
It affected me like 9/11.
Okay.
About the same intensity. Mm. Absolutely. He was my commander in chief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How could it happen? Why did it happen? I couldn't believe 9/11. It was just. Mm-hmm. Could not believe that.
Mm-hmm.
In the same intensity. You have this enormous feeling of what can I do? How can I? Not that I felt guilty, but what can I do to avoid this type of conflict ever in my country?
Mm-hmm.
As we're in for a long one this time, in my personal prison, mm-hmm. we've got some people out there that really want to slaughter us. The thing that I have a great problem with, I know it, much of it is political, but France, for instance, and perhaps Germany and some of the other countries, France particularly, if they'd have flown that airplane into the Eiffel Tower, how would he feel today? If,
mm-hmm.
You know, we took the hit. We helped France. Out of a hell of a war.
Two.
Okay. And Germany, mm-hmm. for God's sakes. You know, it stifles my imagination of why these people can't. And this guy is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit if they are attaching oil to it or politics or whatever.
Yeah.
But when they get the big one going, my goodness, who are they going to come crying to?
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where they're going to go. Help us. Mm-hmm. Help us again, please. I don't even want to get on that subject.
Well, but in terms of the emotional impact that Kennedy's assassination had then, it must have made you angry and...
Angry?
Mm-hmm.
Stunned, angry, mm-hmm. Bewildered.
Mm-hmm.
Cried.
Yes, sir.
I hit a man. Thank God that son of a bitch is dead, he said, so I hit him. I felt anger at him. I shouldn't have, but I did.
Well, let's see. When Johnson came into power then afterwards, and... the next year, 1964, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Were you surprised at how quickly the United States escalated its participation, its activities in Southeast Asia after that incident?
I was surprised they didn't do it faster.
Hmm.
That's what surprised me.
Is that the progressive nature of the buildup?
Right.
Hmm.
I was surprised they... I'm a hair retriever guy. We could have won that war that fast. Probably didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hair retriever guy.
Okay.
We could have used a small nuclear device just to let them know if you want the big one, it's coming. Or I would have set it in a place where it wouldn't kill anybody. And here's what's available
mm-hmm.
if you want to continue this
mm-hmm.
mess.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to continue, I was disappointed we didn't hit Haiphong Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we should have done that. They were supplying the NVA and the Viet Cong with every imaginable weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the reason for this going on for 10 years. I thought it was handled politically very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
The rules of engagement were absurd.
Mm-hmm.
completely absurd. The ramifications of not being able to shoot at their airplanes unless they were taken off.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes.
You know all these things.
That couldn't hit their bases.
Yeah. You know, this is not, you don't fight a war this way. I mean, you know all these things. From the enlisted side of the house, we felt, and the officer side too, certainly we're not paying for it, but the politicians lost this war. We didn't lose this war, in my purview.
Well, you were back in Vietnam, or in Southeast Asia in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you were in Thailand in
64? Yeah.
Okay.
Thailand, Laos.
And
I'm across the river, see, I work both sides.
Right. Yeah. Both sides of the Mekong.
Yeah, I'd work in Thailand, mm-hmm. and then they would send me over to Savannakhet.
Savannakhet?
Yes.
Okay.
That's Savannakhet. 65, 66.
64, 65.
67, I was back in Vietnam.
And then 67 Vietnam. Okay. You know, we've been talking now for 2.5 hours, and okay. Maybe we should go ahead and take a break.
Okay.
So I'm going to end the interview today with Haplitz. Thank you very much, sir. It's dinner time.